Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take another look at Mars's upcoming opposition to Jupiter. So this is happening this week in the next couple of days. I'm going to put the real-time clock up and give you a look at it. And this is a transit that is perfecting just as Mars is about to change signs into Virgo. And as it changes signs into Virgo, its host changes from the Sun in Leo to Mercury. Now, Mercury is under the beams right now and about to go through its transformation into the evening star. So as that happens, eventually Mercury will get into Virgo with Mars and conjoin Mars, at which point Mercury will be in its domicile and exalted. So you could say that there's a pretty deep change actually happening for Mars in the upcoming weeks. So at any rate, I'm going to be visiting that in August, but just sort of reminding everybody that that's a thing right now as well. So here you can see Mars in late Leo, just about to move into an opposition with Jupiter, who is retrograding back into Aquarius. So that happens tomorrow. And then you can see their opposition on Thursday, July 29th. So I'm doing a two-part series. Yesterday I did part one. If you haven't watched that, you might go take a look at that one where I review some of the basic archetypal combinations of Mars and Jupiter, and go over a little bit of that dignity shift for Mars that's coming up as well. The other thing that's happening is the Sun is coming into a conjunction with Mars. Now that's a little ways off, but check this out. If we just go forward a little bit, you're going to see that the Sun catches Mars at about 14 degrees of Aquarius in of Libra in October. And that's the official kind of rebirth moment for whenever the Sun conjoins with Mars. It's a big reset in the synodic cycle with the two planets. So this is an old Mars right now as well, bringing up some old stuff. At any rate, the opposition again that we're looking at right now goes into the effect. It's already in effect right now. Really, you're going to feel it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, probably the most intensely. You could probably already be feeling it for the last couple of days at least, and you could feel it all the way through this upcoming weekend. So that being said, I want to illustrate a few things about Mars and Jupiter. Let's just take a look at their kind of archetypal disposition according to the houses that they rejoice in. So I'm going to actually, I'll just put in the moon, and let's start with the sixth house for Mars. So this is the sixth house. I've got the moon in there right now, but the sixth house was called the Joy of Mars and the House of Bad Fortune. One of the reasons for this is that the planet, by means of its secondary motion through the zodiac, is moving or aiming itself toward the seventh house. But the primary motion of the sky, which is much faster, that's the motion that is created by the revolving of the earth on its axis, is going to bring the moon downward. So you're getting a picture of the moon that by its own accord would like to be heading up above the horizon, but is being dragged down. And that picture of struggling upward while being pulled downward was associated with Mars and the house called Mala Fortuna, bad fortune. It's associated with fighting and struggling, working, servitude, slavery, chronic illnesses that they're hard to fight off or they won't go away. So this idea of the daily struggle of life, the daily work of life, the daily fight of life, the daily grind, the competition of life, things that you have to sacrifice and work very hard for, as well as kind of nagging injuries or illnesses. Also, this is a place that can speak to conflict and warfare. So that is one of the reasons why the sixth house was associated with Mars. Now, if we back this up, let's go put the moon in the 11th house. The 11th house is called the Joy of Jupiter. And one of the reasons for this is that the moon is being brought up to the 10th house, to the top of the sky by the primary motion. And you can almost imagine, because the moon is heading away from the place that it's being brought to, that there's this kind of cyclical motion that was imagined in this place. Like the moon is kind of going out from the 10th into the 11th and being brought back or referred back to the place that it's heading away from. So for that reason, the 11th house, one of the reasons, the 11th house is associated with allies or friends that help you achieve or accomplish your ambitions or goals or dreams, or to achieve fame or success or rank or notoriety. So anyone or anything that acts as an aid or an ally or an asset to help a person succeed or to help a person to become more well-connected, anything that would be a guiding sense of, let's call it help or yeah, some sense of a good luck or good fortune that guides us along toward the realization of our dreams or our intentions. So that was all the 11th house, which was associated with Jupiter. It's called the house of good spirit and the joy of Jupiter. So you can imagine now, if you're taking these two planets, Jupiter and Mars, and pitting them against one another, you have a couple of themes that can come up. I want to meditate on these a little bit more deeply today. And the themes that I want to bring up, the first one is what I would generally call purposeful struggling or purposeful suffering. And I heard this phrase recently from an author who wrote a book on, it was called The Tao of Jiu-Jitsu. Something I've been reading as I've been taking jiu-jitsu lessons and finding really helpful. And he used this phrase, purposeful suffering, I think it was, or purposeful struggling or something like that. And to me, this couldn't be more of a Mars-Jupiter kind of theme. I was thinking about why this is such a powerful Mars-Jupiter theme. And you can see it pretty easily. Jupiter, on the one hand, represents everything that might give our life some sense of cohesion. It's the virtues, the ethics, the political or philosophical stances or religious stances that we take, the cultural affiliations that give us some sense of unity, coherence to life. And as well as anyone or anything that adds to our life a sense of abundance or happiness or goodness, a sense that our life has some overarching sense of purpose or meaning. Even people, everyone's got some skin in the game, you know, even people who are like, look, there is no meaning. There is no larger meaning. There is no larger purpose. I don't believe in any of that. Still, when approached with different kinds of life challenges, such a person will say, well, I don't look at things that way. Instead, I choose to look at things in terms of, well, there's, you know, let's say it's just, you know, we live and then we die. And we should be good to people and, you know, try to enjoy the lives that we live while respecting others. Okay, well, there's your Jupiter, right? Even if there's no greater, higher cosmic order or truth or belief that you aspire to, at some point, someone will say, well, why are you doing the things that you're doing? Why do this and not this? Why make this choice and not that choice? And, you know, even people who have zero apparent, you know, ideological, you know, commitments or religious beliefs or something like that, political affiliations, they'll still have some sense of what guides their actions and what gives, what makes a choice meaningful and virtuous in one, you know, versus another one that may not be. Everyone has to make choices like that. I've never met anyone who's not making choices according to what they believe is good or what is not good or what is virtuous or helpful versus what is unhelpful. Even people who might have a bottom line that's incredibly, you know, just let's just say selfish. It's just about me and my will and what I want and what I do. Still something they've still arrived at a decision that says that's what I'm prioritizing versus something else. So Jupiter, you really can't not play with Jupiter. Like I said, everyone's got some skin in the game. So, when you think about Jupiter like that, and then you add Mars into the mix, what you're really looking at is how does the will, how does competition, struggle, dominance, conflict, how does perseverance, hard work, determination, muscle, strength, how do those qualities fit into whatever paradigm we're operating, whatever sort of Jupiterian paradigm that we're operating from? If I look at my life, for me, you know, just kind of reflecting on these Mars-Jupiter themes and looking also in some of the past Mars-Jupiter transits, I went back and looked at some of them. What were some of the things that were happening? So I want to share with you some of the things that were happening as I had to make choices about purposeful struggling. And these were times when I had major transits, either to natal Jupiter from Mars or to natal Mars from Jupiter. Okay. So when I, began drinking ayahuasca, which ended up being about a 10-year path for me. When I began that path, there was activations of the same planetary combinations in the sky. And, you know, what I was left with after my very first ceremony was that if I want to learn in life and grow and feel good about myself, a healthy confidence, not like a machismo, but like a healthy sense of self-respect. I've accomplished things that I'm proud of. It doesn't really matter where it stands necessarily in the, you know, history books, but just things that that I'm happy with, things that I was able to do that I feel good about. When I look at, when I look at my life, those things are going to have required from me that I suffer and struggle. Now, obviously not in a masochistic, you know, terrible, awful, like self-harming way, but there's going to be some blood, sweat, and tears involved for me to get anywhere that I want to go. That was one of the very first things that ayahuasca taught me. And it taught me in a way that was not just the rhetoric of some, you know, nasty smelling gym teacher in fifth grade or something like, hey guys, if you don't do push-ups, life is going to suck or something like that. It was a real inner realization. Like I'm going to have to put some blood, sweat, and tears into this life if I want to feel good about myself, and not necessarily in a way that, again, that gains me honor or glory, but just internally, how do I feel good about myself? I'm going to have to purposefully struggle with some things that I really want to do, or that I want to change, or that I want to get good at, or that I want to, maybe things that I want to eliminate. So it's going to require some really hard work on behalf of the things that I believe in. That was the very, and that all came, obviously ayahuasca is this very powerful experience. You purge, you get pushed existentially, psychologically, mentally, physically. You have otherworldly visionary experiences. But the very first ceremony, far more than anything like that, the takeaway was just life is amazing, but I kind of have to put my back into it. You know, I gotta get some elbow grease going, you know? And that was a very Jupiter Mars kind of moment for me. Okay. So that was one of them. The next one for me that was really important was when I began studying and practicing asana, yoga asana. This is not when I really got into bhakti yoga, but when I got into physical asana. I began, kind of in the same mood of the ayahuasca world. I began with Bikram yoga, which is like, it didn't take long before I actually found something that worked a little bit better for me, but if you've ever been to a Bikram class, it's like, you know, it's like doing yoga in a sauna. But the same thing came through, not just with Bikram yoga, but my first year or so with yoga, which also began with some very important transits to natal Mars and natal Jupiter. The same thing was there, which was that a little bit less I wasn't experiencing yoga as intensely as I was ayahuasca. But this feeling that there is a purposeful struggle. I really love that phrase. It's not just, I'm not just going to become more flexible or to look more toned or whatever. Like, you know, there's something deeper that's happening here. When I get on the mat, when I practice yoga, when I breathe, when I learn how to find flexibility in places that I didn't think were there. There's a lot of carryover off the mat from on the mat. And yet I have to do this regularly. And there's struggle in that. There's struggle to make it consistent. And the consistency and the struggle. And again, one of the reasons that for me personally, it was a struggle is I was usually one of maybe a few guys at most in yoga classes that I was attending. I'm sure that's changed since I started attending. This was like 15 years ago, or I don't know how long it was ago now, 12, 13 years ago. So, but there was the same feeling there. This is not easy. I don't necessarily enjoy this. There's times I do, but it's good for me. That's a Mars-Jupiter dynamic. Similarly, in my life, when I took up meditation, you wouldn't think meditation, Mars-Jupiter, but insofar as I don't like this, this isn't easy, but I have to do it. I have to stay determined. I have to take up the challenge. The results are worth it. They're transformative. They're giving me, they're part of a cohesive plan for my life. So you'll often find, for example, that people, when they're getting Mars-Jupiter transits, will start a new diet or a new workout routine or something. And you're going, why are you doing this? I'm like, because I feel like I need to, right? Where does that come from? Why does that even exist? It has something to do with the fact that we're not here to just completely have a good time. You can have, or at least we're not here to just completely like kick back and, you know, eat tubs of popcorn, right? Right. Like the movie theater of life also has like, stretches that are really challenging, or we need to, there's something about our spirits that need to be challenged. I mean, one of the things that strikes me as, you know, a downside of our modern era is that we've really gotten to a point where everything is so easy for us. You know, that relatively speaking to any other period in history, the struggle to survive is not as bad because of a lot of the technology we've developed, ease of living. Not this isn't true for all people everywhere, of course, but as a result of that, there's something that's, it's like a, you know, it's like a dog that really needs to go out and run and like sweat and play, or go into the woods and like get all gnarled, but that's taken away. And then there's like this weird degenerative condition that starts sneaking in if the dog's just laying around all the time. And I'm not saying we're just laying around all the time, but kind of, maybe I kind of am saying that, but there is this feeling of like, you know, if we don't have some purposeful challenge, that we start, our spirit starts to atrophy. We just need that in different areas. And if we don't have one that's consciously created, that's consciously chosen, that's a part of a wisdom tradition or a lineage or a group or something, then we tend to pick more and more superficial or toxic things to challenge ourselves with. We end up, you know, bickering with people on social media or something like that. I love social media when it comes to sharing pictures, stories, having fun with people, but I've gotten off Facebook, Twitter, certain platforms, because you really can't, you know, if I share anything other than like joy, memories, jokes, then typically, you know, things devolve into like all out turf wars about ideological differences or perspectives or whatever. My point is that I wonder if that would be as bad if people were having meaningful challenges to their spirit, to their body, to their mind regularly in other areas of life. Would they feel like they, you know, it's like the muscle's just not getting worked. Anyway, another time in my life was jujitsu. When jujitsu came into my life, this summer, this current aspect been forming as some of the, I would say my first little tiny breakthroughs have been happening with jujitsu. Parenting, there's been some, I was looking back at some of the births of both of my kids and milestones in my kids' lives. Parenting is a meaningful challenge. People take it up and they say, you know, like a biological or an evolutionary biologist may say something, I don't know what they say, but they may say something like, well, you know, it's, we need to perpetuate the gene pool and we're just programmed biologically to just have kids because we're trying to, you know, keep our genes surviving or whatever. And like, I'm sure there's some truth to that, but there's also truth to the fact that having children gives us something really deep to invest in outside of ourselves, that if you're a parent like me, at least I think you probably would see it as a meaningful or a struggle with purpose. There's something about parenting that gives you, I'm not, there's lots of things that do this, but parenting is something like, there's the things you learn in parenting, you can't learn anywhere else. So, you know, when I sometimes have friends that'll be like, oh no, I think I know what you mean about parenting. And I'm like, no, you don't, you know, but by the same token, that's really the same for a lot of things. There's a lot of things, you know, other times people will do things, I have no idea what that struggle is like, but I can relate to the fact that the struggle is purposeful, that it provides deeper meaning, and we need those things in our life. When I got married, the choice to get married, I know in our culture, we like to think that it's all romance and beauty and it's just great. But actually, you know, taking up vows, you know, like it's like solemn, they're solemn, serious. And we're going to purposefully struggle with them and feel good when we hit milestones and push through difficulties and persist even when it's hard. And but also that gives a sense of cohesion to our lives. We take shelter in the things that we meaningfully struggle with. We there is something there that protects us psychically and that gives us a sense of happiness. Of course, people can go too far with all of this. There's always going to be the person who's like, well, I'm like, what are you doing today? I'm gonna, you know, crawl up a skyscraper with suction cups. All right. That's crazy. You know, maybe you could do something like learn to surf, you know, but at any rate, writing, when I started, my MFA program, there was a Mars Jupiter transit present. And I thought that's interesting. But one of the main features of graduate school for me in writing was competition. Oh my God, is art school competitive? You know, you wouldn't think that. And I didn't really think that going into it, but it was. And I'll speak more about that in a second. Well, you can see I sliced myself. This is one of my daughter's Band-Aids. I sliced myself trying to cut a bagel, which apparently is one of the most common ways that people cut their fingers, I learned. Well, looking online for a bagel cutter afterward. Okay, anyway, so another thing that's a really good lesson about, so meaningful or purposeful struggle, think about that with Mars Jupiter right now and why that's a good thing and the difference too between, you know, masochistic and like a meaningful struggle. Number two is lifting others up is as important as winning, or how we win is as important as winning. Why? Well, the primary reason that it's more important that, like for example, let's say you're playing a game. Like I'll use the example with my daughters. We have this game with these little bean bags and you throw them and what is it called? I forget what it's called. It's like bean bag toss. And there's these little wooden things on the ground and there's a hole in them and you try to get them in. And so I might be playing and, you know, obviously like, you know, like let's just say like, I know how to get the bean bags in the hole. My daughters are just learning how to do it. It is much more important for me as a parent that I am orchestrating a meaningful, fun experience than it is that I win. Now, I know that would seem like that seems obvious, but actually the same principle is true in essence, that's true for all arenas in life, that we're trying to create an experience that is there might be a winner, there might be a loser. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not personally into the philosophy that there should only be winners, but there might be winners and losers, but that how the game is conducted, that the overall experience is that of joy and fun and upliftment. That's how Jupiter can tone Mars when Mars tends to be all about winning or competition or dominance. No, it's actually as important that the game is played well, because in an archetypal sense, the game never ends. I love how I've been learning more about this in jiu-jitsu, because every time at the end of class, you do some sparring, you give a little high five, a little fist bump, you roll, it's called, and the individual people are called players, the individual practitioners, and you roll. Someone might, you know, dominate the other person or get a submission or whatever. You tap, tap, done, high five, little hug, let's play again. And you keep going like that. And every single night that I've gone in and at the end of the class that this happens, I think to myself, you know, in the Bhagavatam, which is our famous text in bhakti yoga, one of Krishna's favorite activities to do with his friends, one of his favorite leelas, Krishna as God, for example, likes to wrestle with his friends. This is an eternal pastime of wrestling with God. Think about that. Think about how beautiful it is that wrestling with God is a game that God enjoys playing with people and that can happen eternally. and that sport of wrestling with God in the mode of friendship, competition, fun, joy itself is understood as never ending. So good sportsmanship comes from that realization that the game is bigger than the outcome. Just like we say, the journey is better than the destination, but you could take this in almost in the context of sports as well. And I've noticed that this is true in a lot of different walks. Like if I look back at all those different purposeful arenas of struggling in my life, the best shamans that I worked with were really concerned that the overall experience be joyful and uplifting, more so than it be something that prove your endurance or that prove, you know, what a intense transformation you just had, or you got out your demons. That they were conscious that, yeah, you know, some of those challenges are going to be there. And there's going to be victories. And there's going to be some like real difficult patches, but overall is the experience contained within something meaningful, joyful, beautiful? Are these struggles a part of an eternal Leela, an eternal game? And those were my favorite shamans. Similarly, in the yoga classroom, my favorite yoga instructors were those that somehow made me feel like they were just people on their mat, just like me. Didn't matter what positions they could get into or not. They had a way of making the class joyful and making the experience of yoga feel like it's, look, these postures are eternal postures. This flow is an eternal flow. Let's have fun with it. Let's struggle, but let's make sure we understand the struggle is eternal. In jiu-jitsu, when people don't understand that, and I'm speaking about myself, it's as though the way that I've seen that manifest in myself right away on the mat is, I better win this. I can't lose another one. I don't want to see everyone else see me here like losing all the time. Well, you know, actually, I've heard people, jiu-jitsu practitioners on YouTube giving advice to brand new people saying, you know, chill out and enjoy it. You have to really enjoy losing and learning from the losing and taking joy in the lessons learned from losing. It's a humility that you're coming across is precious. Be like so joyful that you're receiving humbling experiences in a context that's ultimately very safe, uplifting, joyful. There's a lot of camaraderie, things like that. You know, like people who meditate, I've never liked people who being in the company of people who meditate, and it makes, and they're like, they're eye gazing. They're trying to like dominate and control the situation because I'm so centered. How about you? You know, so I'm always like, like you're just too much for me. So, you know, what people that I really enjoy that have meditated are those people who make me feel calm and tranquil, and they bring me into their vibe without making me feel like it's a competition. The greatest meditation teachers I've ever had are people who their vibe calms me down, doesn't make me feel like there's any kind of dominance going on or any kind of posturing. Also, let's see. In jiu-jitsu, it's not fun to be with partners who are interested in winning. So I don't make a very good sparring partner if I'm just interested in winning. And I'm sure that newcomers could easily be turned off from jiu-jitsu if they get in and they're being paired up with people who just want to crush them. Because it's like, then nobody's lifting anybody else up. Anyway, that was another one I forgot to mention. As a parent, if I'm teaching my children, but not helping them to feel good about how they're learning difficult things or how they're doing difficult things, riding a bike or something like that, then I'm being negligible. That's Mars Jupiter sensitivity. How do you take someone as a teacher or a coach to a space that pushes them, but doesn't injure their spirit? That's a Mars Jupiter question. Let's see. In marriage, sometimes you'll focus intensely on if your needs are or are not being met, or how your partner can or should change to meet your needs. Mars Jupiter takes pride in serving something bigger than itself, in putting its effort toward serving. So a good Mars Jupiter lesson for marriage is, rather than what I deserve, what I need that I'm not getting, look at how I can serve or how I can give, take up a heroic sense of look, I'm going to set my needs aside. It's the best time to set your own needs aside. And I know this is not applicable in all situations, but the best time to set your own needs aside is when you're feeling complainy or gripey or needy to or in relation to a spouse or partner. In those moments, if you can take the opportunity to say, okay, you know what? This is a perfect opportunity for me to change a pattern. Right now, I'm going to say, how can I serve my partner? Now, of course, if you're with a partner who's like, there's zero reciprocity, okay, that's something different. But you know what? I'm just your average daily gripe or whine or moan. If you can turn that into a moment of how can I purposefully shift my suffering into service? So that's, I feel like that's a very applicable Jupiter Mars lesson for marriage. And interesting that Jupiter Mars would be present when I got married. Important not just to be good at astrology, for example, but to, for me, like, you know, there's this period of time in astrology where you're learning and you're taking on a ton of information, reading a ton of books, listening to a lot of different astrologers. And the natural thing to do is to compare yourself to other people and, or to, you know, make sure that people know, like I have really something really good to say, or I have some natural ability or whatever. But the same thing goes for me, which is that like my favorite teachers are people who have not just given me knowledge or who have not made me feel like, wow, you're up here and I'm down here, but who have really helped me to feel inspired by what they are inspired by, to be excited along with them, to be inspired by what inspires them, to be enthused from the word entheos, the God within, to have the transference of the divine presences that this person has worked with, whether it's been in grad school and creative writing or whatever else. So my goal as an astrologer, though I fail regularly at this, is to try to transfer something of my joy or what makes me excited to other people without this too much of a sense of like, this is proprietary. These are my ideas. This is my discovery or something like that. That tends to kill the joy, and people don't, the way that I see it, this knowledge is eternal. It's not my knowledge. It's never been born and it never dies. So whatever I'm tapping into is just always, it's just there. It's just something that's there. And that, in that sense, you know, it's kind of like, I kind of picture myself walking around like a, you know, the theme park of life being like, or the art museum of life being like, hey, and if I find anything, it's like all, I, you know, it's like, the, isn't the natural thing to want to pull some other people over and be like, look at that, you know? And I love it when people are like that too. Like I love people who help me become excited about what they're excited about. That's a Mars Jupiter quality, the ability to inspire, encourage others, to invigorate other people. In graduate school, one of the ways that I survived my Master of Fine Arts program was there were always workshops. We were always workshopping each other's writing, and people were very competitive with one another. And what I noticed was that if I wrote something that I knew was good, like this is like, I've just leveled up or I've just done something really impressive, that often I would receive the most scathing criticisms. And I started realizing, oh, that's jealousy. And I recognized it in myself too, that when my classmates would do something really well or really good, I would get intimidated, resentful, you know, like what, you know, and I just noticed it was like this toxic atmosphere that we were all participating in, which was that the better someone wrote, the shittier we were to each other. And I had an ayahuasca ceremony during the midst of graduate school where this all became clear to me. And I started with this practice where I would read the notes that everyone gave me. You know, everyone gives you notes after these things. And I would read them and I would take them in. And then I had this little gas, this little charcoal grill in my backyard. And I would burn them afterward and release them and really try to say thank you for all of them, even though some of them were coming from like toxic, resentful places. And I had this conversation with one of my graduate school professors at one point talking about this and that I was really struggling with it. And she said something really good, which was that try to really, really relish, appreciate, enjoy, and praise other people for their good work. And if you do that, the rest will take care of itself. And so I did. And that is exactly what happened. I will tell you right now that the best thing that ever really happened to me in graduate school was this moment where I just started really shifting. I made a purposeful shift to appreciate rather than feel threatened by other people's greatness as writers. And, you know, and I will say that I don't attribute that shift to having a book published, but I noticed that my confidence and my ability to write my book, which ended up getting published, was a book, was a memoir about ayahuasca. A lot of that stemmed from my ability to start appreciating rather than competing. As soon as I did that, then there was this feeling of, like I was a part of a team of writers who want to write and do well, and just being a part of something rather than competing with others. I think that's a really important shift to make. And a lot of the times the only place to really make that shift is within our own heart and mind. So, okay. So those are some of the things that I wanted to talk about today. Last but not least, this last Jupiter Mars thing is that hierarchies in nature are, they're real and they exist. They're not the only thing that's real, but they do exist out there. So it could be a hierarchy of knowledge, ability, power, strength, privilege, whatever. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. Some people at the top of hierarchies are nasty and others are not. And hierarchies are not the only thing that exists, but they do exist out there. One of the things that I have also learned in all of these areas that I mentioned, and it feels to me like a Mars Jupiter lesson, and it's one that I feel like I continue to work on and continue to need more, I need to keep learning this lesson, is that like, for example, you know, there's people who are going to look at me in my life, whether mostly my students, as, you know, like he's up here in the knowledge of astrology scale and I'm down here. And to the extent, and of course that is only one way in which I exist as a person in relation to any other person, potentially. But let's just say that a person is sort of mentally participating in that paradigm. And there is a truth to that paradigm, that hierarchy, that, you know, like I know more about astrology than someone who doesn't or something like that. And if a person's learning that you need people who have more knowledge, that are higher up in a hierarchy of wisdom, knowledge, understanding, professional experience, whatever. You know, I think we would agree that most of us would agree that the only ones that we really end up feeling were worthwhile participating in, that don't leave us feeling like I just hate all hierarchies ever, are the ones where the people at the top don't make you feel like they're at the top. They make you feel like they're shoulder to shoulder with you. I'm still a student. I'm still a learner. Here's what I've learned. Let me show you something. I want to lift other people up along the way. That's actually the real measure of people, in my opinion, my humble opinion, who are at the top of any meaningful hierarchy. That they don't make you feel that way. And you only can really recognize and appreciate their quote unquote greatness over time, because you realize how humble they've been and how much they've helped lift other people up. And that's really the sign of greatness, is not just personal excellence, that domination over in comparison to others, but that there is some way in which others are elevated. I've experienced this lately so intensely in the jujitsu classroom. You walk in, there's a clear pecking order. You know, you've got white belts all the way up to black belts. And for the most part, it's a true hierarchy in the sense that the black belts can, you know, kick anyone's butt who's, you know, below them, maybe less so the ones just below them, but the ones that are like much further down the belt scale are just going to get completely, you know, butt kicked by, you know, brown or black belts or whatever. But what I've had the opportunity to do a little bit of work with some of the higher belts in training. And what I really like about them is, I'm engaging with them. And all of a sudden I realize, wow, they're so masterful at what they're doing that they can allow a beginner like myself to learn and grow and explore. And then immediately, you know, they could also flip the switch if they wanted to and demonstrate their superiority with the skill. But they're able to turn that on and off specifically to help me learn and grow. Isn't that amazing? I love that. I think that's one of the coolest things about martial arts that I've learned so far. I'm sure it's pretty similar in any other karate or taekwondo. I'm sure it's a very similar concept. Anyway, I've been really enjoying just learning about all of this lately. So excuse me reaching for all of the metaphors off the tree. Anyway, so I hope that you are going through some, remember these three concepts: purposeful struggling, lifting others up, or like we could call it sportsmanship. And the third part, which is that people who are, have real superiority or dominance in any kind of field or skill or whatever, what makes them truly great is that they don't necessarily act or make you feel inferior. And these are things that are all like good Mars Jupiter lessons. So I hope this has been useful for you today. Watch for this transit coming through Wednesday and Thursday of this week. Hope we're all prepared for it. We have astrology of August coming up, horoscopes for August coming up, more good stuff to come. So stay tuned, and we'll talk again soon. Take care, everyone. Bye.